Everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
Corey Camper Studio Knockreiner.
Live from the RV and Corey's parking lot comes this episode of the 443, where we'll discuss...
My house got an upgrade. It's so big, I have a parking lot now.
Well, yeah, you know what? Whatever, Mr. CTO. On today's episode, we'll cover the latest indictments against foreign nationals involved in hacking espionage against not just the United States, but other countries, and an update from Microsoft on their efforts to disrupt a massive botnet, and then finally an update from Google's threat analysis group on several foreign national APTs and their effects to disrupt the U.S. elections. With that, let's go ahead and drive on in. So starting off this week, the U.S. Department of Justice continued their series of indictments against foreign nationals by leveling charges against six Russian intelligence operatives. So this all started back in 2014 when the U.S. Justice Department indicted five members of the Chinese military for cyber espionage, which was the first time they'd ever done that against officers of a foreign government for hacking. But these latest rounds covered incidents from malware attacks and phishing attacks over the last 4 years, including quite a few targets, and the majority of which not actually residing in the United States, which I thought was pretty interesting. Some of the charges included the attacks against Ukraine's power grid in 2015. There were attacks against France's election efforts a few years ago, against the nation of Georgia, and then also against the Olympic Committee and efforts to hold Russia accountable for both when Russia was banned from the Olympics and also for when they allegedly poisoned someone with a nerve agent in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, so far none in the U.S., by the way. And the only one that I guess you might argue is the U.S. is they also talked about the attack NotPetya, which I think we've covered in long past podcasts, which was also targeted towards the Ukraine, but NotPetya had kind of a global effect. So maybe NotPetya is the only one you could argue started hitting U.S. pharmaceutical companies and FedEx, etc.
Yeah, they even called out like FedEx and those pharmaceutical companies and the $1 billion worth of damage that NotPetya caused. Outside that, though, they talked about Black Energy and Indestroyer, which were responsible for those power grid hacks back in 2016. The indictment actually has quite a bit of details, and it's like 50 pages long. And it goes through first naming all six of the individuals down to like what their job role was in each of these incidents, and then going through each of the attacks with pretty decent detail. Like they talked about Ukraine grid attack and how it started really in 2015 with a spearfish against some related companies where they basically tested out Black Energy to steal credentials and then kill disk to cover their tracks. And then going into the actual attack in 2016 in December where they took down the grid and like for 200,000 or so customers.
Yeah, I kind of forgot on the Ukraine attack with kill disk and stuff, there's also like embedded joke code that had to do with one of my favorite shows, Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
They had Mr. Robot F Society stuff embedded here and there. Don't know if that was a joke or some sort of false flag to kind of hide who did it, but I found it interesting.
Yeah, in the indictment, they even noted that how kill disk malware sets up a bunch of memory locations, one with zeros, one with F Society in Leet speak. And then one with Mr. Robot in Leet speak, and how we would use those to overwrite files, then delete the file and recreate them with the same name, and then reboot the computer, which basically, because a lot of those files were system files, made it completely inoperable. But they think that its main goal was to just cover the tracks by also deleting log data and then obviously effectively bricking the computer to make it more difficult to do forensic analysis on it. They also talked about, like you said, you mentioned false flag attacks. In the indictment, they pointed out that in a lot of their attempts, they tried to make their attacks and make their malware and infrastructure look like it came from other groups, including the Lazarus Group, which is North Korea's nation state hacking organization. So they definitely did try and make it look like others were doing it too. Biggest like question from this, though, is like, what do you think the point is of the U.S. charging these nationals? There's no way that Russia is going to send over their six intelligence officers to face trial in the States. So why do you think the U.S. government would actually go through the steps of trying to do this?
Seems like politics to me, kind of like, we see you, we know what you're doing. Like you said, I mean, most of these attacks happen in other countries, so it's questionable. Besides, if we could even indict, or I'm sorry, even if we can't get them to the U.S., the lot of these crimes didn't take place in the U.S., so do we even have jurisdiction? So I don't think it's necessarily to really catch these guys and put them in jail, but to show the international community, and especially the Russian hacking groups, that, hey, we see what you're doing, we're watching you. This type of cyber campaign on a global level is not acceptable.
Yeah, it does make sense that this really seems to be a, hey, look at all this info we can dig up on you and your tactics and your procedures, and even down to the individuals that were responsible. It, like, maybe not a scare tactic, but like a we're on to you kind of thing. Did think it was kind of interesting.
Power tactic.
Yeah, exactly. I did think it was interesting that, like, a lot of these attacks that the indictment highlighted all started with pretty dang basic spear phishing emails. Like, even one of them, the one towards the Ukraine power grid, it was basically just a spear phish to a systems administrator that had a macro laced Excel file on it. Which, I mean, if you're a systems administrator and you receive a unsolicited email with macros enabled and you enable those macros, that doesn't speak too highly of your training for your position, in all honesty. But they weren't like these sophisticated attacks. They were using like borrowed tools. They were repurposing things like WannaCry into NotPetya, and just using plain old spear phishing. It's not like you would think with like a nation state, you're going to see that cool movie style stuff of like the 0 days and hacking through the mainframe, but it's just not the case.
Yeah, lowest hanging fruit, right? I mean, you don't have to worry about sophisticated hacking if the basic stuff is still working.
Yeah, exactly. So either way, though, I don't anticipate, I think both of us are in agreement, there's not really much that's going to come of this, but I doubt it's the last time we will see these types of charges levied. And from a grand jury in the States.
You might even remember back in May of 2014, we did a similar thing to some Chinese, five Chinese military cyber espionage actors. So I really think, like you say, nothing will come of these guys going to jail necessarily, but the U.S. government is pointing out every time an adversarial state is using cyber techniques to do some sort of attack. So I think it's more just a political global message to talk about these sorts of attacks being used.
Yep. So moving on to our next topic. Over the last few weeks, Microsoft has been pretty busy leading a coalition of telcos and cybersecurity firms to disrupt the TrickBot malware botnet. So we've talked about TrickBot a few times, I think, on here. Our DNS watch service, the DNS firewalling service, actually detects TrickBot command and control connections and malware delivery attempts quite frequently. It is a very prolific botnet affecting, I think the last count was over 1 million devices since 2016. One of the reasons it's so successful is it actually uses a malware as a service model for distribution, where the original authors create the malware payload and then license it out to individuals to deploy and obtain access to systems, which they can then use to send out ransomware or maybe exfiltrate data. But starting October 12th, Microsoft began obtaining court orders to take down the command and control infrastructure for the botnet. And they started by identifying 69 different IP addresses of servers that were hosting this infrastructure, and they were, through court orders, then able to disable access to those IPs. They didn't actually say in their blog post how they disabled it. My assumption is like taking BGP takeovers or working with the ISPs just to block them specifically. But as of October 18th, they managed to take down 94% of TrickBot's infrastructure. And this includes quite a few more servers that they brought online after the first wave. Microsoft was able to take down 58 of those 59 new ones as well. In their blog post, though, they noted that of the original command and control servers, 7 of them they weren't able to take down because they weren't traditional command and control servers, but instead they were infected IoT devices that TrickBot had taken over and added as part of their infrastructure, which I thought was interesting. I hadn't heard of TrickBot taking over IoT devices yet and using them as basically a, I guess, critical at this point, part of their infrastructure to continue command and control.
Yep, I certainly hadn't heard of that. Obviously, we've heard a lot about TrickBot, but IoT SCNC, say that a couple times fast. That definitely seems somewhat new.
Yeah, but it makes sense. Like, a lot of these IoT devices do have enough power to issue out commands, especially if you have a distributed model where you have quite a few of them added.
I mean, to be clear, a CNC is typically just a web service. Like, all you have to have is something that can allow you to run a web server and or any network server. But it's not like this web server is pushing graphics and code. It's literally just a web server that takes messages from the bot. So, I mean, all these commands are text. It's very low resource. So, like you say, a command and control server really is very little resource.
Yep. So Microsoft says they've had to go back to obtain even more court orders throughout this time to take down the infrastructure. And they're going to continue leading this charge and through Election Day on November 3rd. They stated that this has always been about disrupting TrickBot's operations during peak election activity, which I didn't realize how used TrickBot was for, like, I don't want to say election meddling. That feels like a weird word to say now, but at least election interference or disinformation during the elections. But it makes sense since it is such a prolific botnet that people that are interested in interfering or changing an election outcome would use it for their actions.
I doubt it's changing outcome. I like you say, TrickBot is malware as a service. We typically see it installing ransomware and other stuff too. So it could just be someone being someone that these actors have rented TrickBot out to, might be spamming links and stuff like that. Because as you mentioned, Microsoft does make it clear they're doing this because of Election Day election issues in general. But we haven't seen much. I think even the FBI hasn't seen much other than like disinformation campaigns with links to weird videos and stuff like
that. Microsoft did also note in their last blog post, though, that it seems like the authors or people that have used TrickBot are basically scrambling. They're seeing previous TrickBot operators attempting to use competing malware to drop what were previously TrickBot payloads. So, like, they're moving on to the next one now because...
Emotet, probably.
Yeah, because they've been successful.
Yeah, in these malware as a service groups, we actually, in the threat labs, me and Trevor, one of our analysts, had a big discussion about how related Emotet and TrickBot are. Emotet, by the way, is another botnet, just like TrickBot. It's been around for ages and ages. Also malware as a service, although both of these are... You have to be at a pretty high level of the underground to have access to these tools. They're not at the lower layers. But anyways, Emotet is definitely been seen pushing TrickBot. As you say, perhaps this is a reason if TrickBot's own command and control or attack tools are not able to infect new victims, use some other malware as a service to distribute.
Yep.
By the way, I'm curious why Microsoft hasn't got them at all. Because as you add up the numbers, you know, you mentioned early on, I think they got 58 of 59. Now they got 62 of 69 new ones. So I think that the total is, so far Microsoft has taken down 120 of 128 servers. I wonder why those 8 have survived. Are they maybe the ones that are in the bulletproof hosting in Russia or something like that?
Oh, they'd said a few of them were those IoT devices that were more difficult, but you'd think they'd be able to contact whatever ISP is sitting in front of them and work with them. But like you said, maybe it could be like a ISP out of their quote-unquote jurisdiction, or at least someone not willing to work with them.
Yeah, it doesn't... To me, the IoT thing is interesting, but it doesn't make sense for why they couldn't... Like, if they're essentially getting the IP cut off at a telco level, doesn't really matter what the device is.
Yeah.
Unless maybe the IoT device is a shared device. It could be, who knows,
right?
Maybe some legit shared device that they can't totally take down.
Yeah. A big takeaway I had from their blog post, though, was that they don't really seem convinced that this is a sustainable effort on their part. Like, they're disrupting it, but they don't, it doesn't come off as them saying they'll be able to make it go away entirely. Like, they're going to try until November 3rd and then set up the framework to hopefully continue, but maybe with a little less effort. So we could still see a resurgence of TrickBot at the end of the year or coming into next year as they kind of lay off the gas of this.
And I think we will. And that's, I think they're smart for saying that. As you pointed out, they, in all the material on this, they mentioned it's a disruption campaign, not necessarily a takedown. But I think that Microsoft, of the vendors out there, has done a lot of botnet takedowns. A lot of times legally going after the infrastructure. That's kind of what they've perfected, is a legal team that works with these telcos. But they always come back. It may not necessarily be the same actors, but you got to realize when the actual code for the command and control and the bot is malware as a service on the underground, when you take down a botnet, even if you took it down totally, you might be just taking down one operator of that botnet. There's nothing from preventing it from popping up under new command and control infrastructure and slightly modified code. So I think they're smart to not claim they're going to get rid of it forever. And I also think it's nice that they're at least doing the disruption during the, you know, the high threat of the election coming up.
Yeah, and they seem to be doing a good job out of it. So hats off to Microsoft.
Yeah, how often have you said that?
Yeah. Well, you know, as of late, quite a bit more often than previously. Good job for them. So moving on to our last topic, this is kind of a follow-up to something we chatted about, it feels like, I think about 6 months ago now, where Google's threat analysis group, or TAG, started posting updates on basically all of the threats and major nation-state APTs that they've been tracking in monthly or at least quarterly blog posts. So just this week, Google released another update from their TAG group, where they highlighted different campaigns from APT 35, which is originates out of Iran, and APT 31, which originates out of China. They talked about different campaigns from each of them using spear phishing emails and tracking links targeting political campaigns of both major political candidates for the U.S. elections. And then they went into a few details for a few incidents. So first, they started out that so far, they have not detected a successful attack against either of these campaigns, at least with services that Google's hosting. But they've still been able to identify quite a few of the different tactics that the threat actors are using. One of them, so APT 31, which is the Chinese-based one, used a campaign that contained links that would download malware from GitHub. It was a Python-based malware that then used Dropbox for the command and control server. And the reason they highlighted this was because every single piece of the attack was hosted on legitimate services, which is pretty much par for the course for what we've been seeing a lot recently with some of the DNS firewalling indicators we've seen from phishing attacks, where attackers are abusing legitimate services like cloud hosting providers, or in this case, cloud storage and a cloud code repository to initiate these attacks and basically piggyback off of their good reputation to go after people.
Yeah, it's obviously a little harder to block something, if especially if you're doing it at a domain level, if it's GitHub or Dropbox for that matter. So they're smart enough to realize that security people are watching and trying to block their normal command and control and or distribution architecture. So makes sense to use legit, you know, legit organizations. We can still block it, by the way, with some tools. There's more URL specific tools where a exact link on Dropbox might be blocked rather than just the whole site, but still smart on their side.
Yeah, we've seen a few examples of this. They've been really annoying to try and block. Using Google APIs, and specifically the APIs and storage behind Android-based apps, where the apps receive, instead of like a subdomain that we could block easily with a DNS firewalling service, they receive their own URL path off of that. So it's a legitimate like Google APIs domain that we cannot block without blocking all Google services, basically. And you do have to instead use other tools to block the URL instead of the domain. So, like you said, attackers definitely seem to be moving more towards abusing these legitimate services as at least part of, or in this case, most of their attack delivery and command and control mechanisms, just to make it much more difficult to take them down. In the blog post, Google also highlighted another attack where the threat actors actually impersonated McAfee. They said that targets were prompted to install a legitimate version of McAfee AV from GitHub while the malware was also simultaneously installed on the system. I thought that was kind of funny, and this is a bit of a dig at McAfee, that the threat actors actually had the victims install antivirus while installing the malware, seemingly knowing that it would not detect their malware installation.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad.
It's definitely a flex.
Yeah. They noted that whenever a user, a Google user, is targeted by one of these government-based attacks, they've started displaying this prominent warning. They showed a screenshot of it. It's basically got a header of government-backed attackers maybe trying to steal your password, and it's got a couple paragraphs of tips on like how to defend yourself and why they might be going after you, and then a link to these blog posts explaining how they're doing it. They showed that they've sent out 32,000 of these warnings since the start of the year, which is pretty nuts. I'm assuming that quite a few of them were going to the same individuals. Like, it's probably not 32,000 individuals, but either way, like, these nation state organizations have been really stepping up their volume, especially during the election season.
And by the way, if you think about it, it's still a, you know, the use of legitimate resources you might consider a little sophisticated, although really not that much. But what it's really still coming down to is phishing of credentials. You know, these guys are mostly just trying to get credentials of, you know, campaign political staffers of some sort, because they want to get information probably to leak and to disrupt elections. So again, even though nation state actors, even though clearly trying to sow some disinformation about, say, the election, the Biden and Trump campaigns, and or COVID-19, it's not really groundbreaking tactics to steal a credential.
No.
But it is very effective for an attacker. I mean, it's as we've pointed out in many podcasts, your credentials are kind of the keys to the kingdom. If it doesn't matter the security you have, if I can get your credential.
Exactly. One last thing, in the closing paragraph of this blog post, they pointed out that back in 2017, they actually set the record for the largest DDoS attack against their services. They said back in 2017, several Chinese ISPs, or a DDoS attack originating from several Chinese ISPs, reached 2.5 terabits per second against Google services. They said that they measured at peak 167 million packets per second to 180,000 exposed CLDAP DNS and SMTP servers in a DNS amplification attack, or amplification attack against all those services. And they ended up working with thousands of those vulnerables.
What was it specifically, a DNS amplification? I realize it attacked DNS and SMTP servers and CLDAP, but do we know what kind of UDP amplification it was?
It was CLDAP, DNS, and SMTP. Yeah, those three.
Oh, I thought that. I thought that's what it was attacking, not necessarily that's what they were using for the amplification.
My takeaway from it was that they were pinging off of those services to then go after Google's networks, because then they worked with the owners of those to try and both patch them and pull them down, and then work with the service providers to trace back the source of the spoof packets so that they could be filtered too. They did have a bit of a flex that through that 2.5 terabit per second DDoS, none of their services were interrupted, which is, I mean, it is Google. They're the largest internet company on the face of the earth, but that's still a pretty massive attack that they're able to just absorb across their infrastructure.
Yeah, it's huge. By the way, you can't really amplify with SMTP, so I wasn't sure what that one was doing there. DNS and CLDAP for sure, but SMTP is usually the target, not the amplification vector.
Maybe there's a honestly, I am not a email wizard anymore, so I could not tell you whether there's a UDP version of SMTP, but my hunch is there's got to be. But who knows? Maybe that can be a research project for us. either way, though, interesting stuff from that Google blog post. Well, the last two have actually been pretty good at highlighting some of the, not in like super in-depth details, but at least highlighting the main tactics and procedures that the threat actors are using. So we'll be sure to link that in the show notes so you can take a look at it as well. Either way, I guess best advice to you from today's news topics are protect your credentials and keep on the lookout for those alerts from Google and from Microsoft that you may be the potential victim of a nation state attack. Because who knows, maybe you are important enough for them to go
after. Don't click stupid emails.
Also, don't click stupid emails. How about that just be the title of this episode? That sounds great. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_, Corey's at @SecAdept, and the both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and you will hear from us next week.